Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I've got a really awesome guest today, a guy I actually know and met, Chris LaCourte. Chris is a great guitar player. Let's tell his story a little bit. He's always had a plethora of guitars, keyboards, and drums from as long as he can remember. And that thanks for that goes to, I guess, his grandfather, Ed, and I think we'll ask him some questions about that. He started playing guitar at 10 years old, and he began playing with his local church, and he continued with local acts in years to follow. After that, he became a member of his high school band, serving as percussionist and drum captain for 2 years. And after being introduced to music producers in his hometown of Dallas, Texas, Chris became an in-demand session player in Dallas, and as a result, started commuting to Nashville as well during his college years for studio work. After graduating college with a bachelor's in computer science and finally moving to Nashville in 2011, he toured and recorded with CCM artist Chris August and continued to work on studio recordings. This includes work with producers Ed Cash, David Garcia, Seth Mosley, Casey Brown, Ben Glover, and Christopher Stevens. Man, names in Nashville are so manly. You know, Ed Cash, Seth Mosley, Casey Brown. In December 2012, he started touring as a guitarist and a background vocalist with Dustin Lynch. And Dustin's career has been on an explosive rise following 5 country radio number one hits in a row. And touring with Dustin, he quickly got to witness and learn from many A-list songwriters while they wrote with Dustin. Deciding to put his new songwriting and production knowledge to use, Chris began writing and producing with published songwriters and artists in Nashville, and he's since collaborated with writers, artists, and producers including Corey Crowder, Jason Boyer, Tim Nichols, Adam Sanders, Cale Dodds, Seth Ennis, Tyler Fillmore, Brandon Ray, and Dustin Lynch. Chris has co-written and co-produced 7 new songs of new pop country artist Cash Campbell, which we'll talk about. And after their first song was released, the duo had 7 record labels reach out to them, which means, folks, next time we'll have to go through Chris's manager to get an interview with him. So, Chris, I appreciate your time, buddy. How you doing?
I'm great, Craig. Thanks for having me, man. It's fantastic.
Hey, I want to tell a story about you. So first of all, congratulations on the single with Cash.
Oh, thanks, man. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I bet. We'll talk about it. Congratulations to you and your wife, because you just had a little girl like 3 months ago, right?
Yes, little Charlotte Rose. She's fantastic.
Awesome.
She's a little over 2 months old now.
2 months old. And I met Chris. He was down here with Dustin, and he was kind enough to get Ann and I some tickets. And I saw he was like a proud dad. He showed me all the pictures, his cute little daughter. It was really cool, man. So I want to tell you a little story about Chris. First of all, he's an excellent player. I mean, it was a great show, and he did a great job. But I always judge people by the small things they do in life, because to me, how you do one thing is how you do everything. So let me tell you what a class act Chris is. So he's kind enough to get me and my wife tickets to come see him play, right? And it was him and they opened for Brad Paisley. And it was a couple of other acts in front of Dustin. So I'm always awkward when someone does something for me. So like right away, I feel like, you know, I've got to, you know, make sure I take care of this guy and buy him a bunch of drinks. So just, you know, reciprocate somehow, because I'm a little awkward getting things. So Chris says, hey, let me know where you're sitting, and after my set, I'll come out and hang out with you guys. I was like, wow, that's really cool. Great, you know? So after the set, we're sitting around, and I get a text, and it says, hey, Craig, what do you guys want to drink? And I'm like, Chris, what do you mean, what do I want to drink? He goes, well, there's a bar back here. Just tell me what to drink, and I'll bring you guys some drinks. And I'm like, Chris, I was hoping to buy you a drink. You know, I mean, you don't need to do that. And he goes, look, there's tons of liquor here. Just tell me what you want. And I didn't want anything to drink, but my wife had a drink. And I mean, I thought that was like such a kind thing of you to do, to think about Ann and I mean, that was just a very considerate thing, and I genuinely appreciate that. And it just shows what a considerate human being and an awesome, genuine person you are, man. So thank you very much.
Of course, man. You always got to be a good host. That's how I was born and raised, you know.
No, but you're just a good guy. And he's a really bright guy too. I mean, where'd you go to college? You got a degree in computer science.
I tell everybody I have a nerd degree, and it collects dust on my wall.
And they all do.
No, yeah, right, exactly. Whether you use them or not, but yeah, man, computer science. I went to University of Texas in Dallas, and
awesome.
They have a bunch of really, really high-ranked technical degrees. And yeah, man, computer programming. We'll probably get into that here in a little bit, but it's kind of funny how that collides with my music work a little bit.
You're probably the only guy in Nashville that if something horribly goes wrong with your career, you can go out and start coding and make like triple what you're making or quadruple or 10 times what you're making as a musician, no matter how well you're doing, you know, which is really
funny.
Cool.
I've always kind of gauged the, you know, my income against like, what's the starting salary if I was to use my degree. And I've finally surpassed that in recent years, which is pretty encouraging, I think. Yeah. And maybe my parents they're pretty excited about that too. So.
Sure, man, for sure. Well, man, you got a good story. Let's talk about your Cash Campbell project or whatever you're most excited about. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I always grew up, I've always been a sideman, playing guitar for people, which has been great. You know, got into the session work years ago, which is also awesome because you get to have a little more of a creative say because you're creating music, even if you're just creating the guitar parts for it. But Cash Campbell is kind of my first venture into production and songwriting. So it's extremely rewarding, even if nothing was to happen with it, just to have a musical say on pretty much every front of the song, to really just, you know, use your entire heart and musical creative abilities to create an entire finished product, which is fun. And, so yeah, Cash is an old buddy of mine I knew from years ago, and he, me up a little over a year ago to record some guitars for a song he was writing with a friend. And not only did I give him some guitars, I actually went above and beyond, which isn't necessarily the best way to do it. I wouldn't recommend this, but I put some production elements on it as well, some drums, percussion, some synth. I just did stuff that I felt would really elevate the song some, give it some more, be a little more like radio potential. Mm-hmm. And I only did this because he's an old friend and I've known him for a while, because if it was another coworker, that kind of stuff could be considered insulting or maybe not staying in your lane as a guitar player. But luckily for me, it worked out. He loved it. We wanted to start writing together some more, so we did. And I knew him from Dallas, and I was living in Nashville at the time and still do. And so we were having to work from a distance. It would kind of start out, I would create a track, create a vibe, try to make something really, really inspiring for someone to write to and send it to him. And you know, he was loving it, and we kind of, you know, and the stuff he was sending me, the top line, basically, they call him a top liner. It was fantastic. We kind of had a really cool thing going, and we're like, you know, let's just keep writing, see if we can try to get some songs pitched. He had he has a publishing deal, so we could try to get it pitched through there. And
he has a publishing deal in Dallas.
Actually, it's in it's with Sony ATV, so they're in Nashville. They're in LA, they're everywhere. He had that from just a prior project years ago where he was writing and had, you know, got a publishing deal out of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're just going to write to get pitched and try to make some money, you know, make impact, in Nashville and elsewhere. And a couple friends of ours were like, man, you guys are idiots if y'all don't put this out yourself. This is really good. This is really unique, really cool. And we're like, all right. You know, we got some crazy feedback. I got to play the first song we ended up releasing that we were going to pitch was this track called Cannonball. And I got to play it for a bunch of writers and one of the guys that's one of the singers from Florida Georgia Line one night. And just the response alone from his name's BK from Florida Georgia Line and some of the writers was pretty awe-inspiring. They were really, really excited about it. And kept telling me it was a big old effing hit. You know, so with that, you know, we released it, and about a week later, or within a week, actually, we got reached out to by about 7 different record labels, including country labels in Nashville and pop labels in New York and LA, which is pretty exciting, encouraging stuff.
So you just put it out there literally and did no marketing per se. You just literally dropped it. Spotify, where'd you put iTunes? Where'd you put it?
Yeah, so they recorded like a pretty crazy fun music video for it, put that on YouTube, or put that up on YouTube, and then a week later we released it on like Spotify and Apple Music and all the streaming platforms, iTunes, stuff like that. And I guess my buddy Cash, he had a pretty decent following on social media. I think he had maybe like 80,000 followers from like some cover videos he'd been doing, to kind of just gain audience, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we had a pretty nice little group of people to get it out in front of, which helped. And then, but yeah, it's all been organic, and it's all been this kind of doing things our own way, utilizing the internet, and, you know, not trying to necessarily get in a van and go play in front of people, 20 people a night kind of thing, you know.
Which is probably not what you'd in the, you know, your wish list isn't, that's not what your wish list is anyway. Well, I mean, you've been there, done that.
Yeah. Well, we have.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong against that. I just think in today's, I think that's an older, that's what you had to do back in the day, you know, to try to get radio interest. And now it's like, well, you have the internet. Mm. You can make possibly up to a million impacts on people in one day.
Sure.
You know, potentially, you know, he just had a prior band project that he was a part of.
Okay.
They had some stuff going for them years ago, and through that was able to get a publishing deal.
Okay, I gotcha. So because you guys put this out on your own, this is, you guys own this. Publishing doesn't get half.
Correct. Well, publishing will get, on because he has a deal, they will get whatever agreement he has of his publishing share.
Okay.
But for me, I own 100% of my publishing, 100% of my writer's share. So.
Okay. Awesome.
And then cool. Because we don't have a record label, we own all the master as well.
So what's the decision-making process now as to, A, do you accept, you know, is there an advantage or is there an advantage to not accepting any one of these offers?
You know, I think at some point, especially when it comes to getting on radio, country radio, pop radio, whatever our target audience is, you do need a record label, I feel.
To push it out there.
Right, because okay. They have teams that have the record radio station relationships. And I've seen it hands-on with Dustin, what that looks like. And especially in country radio, it's all about relationships. It's all about, they want to know you. They want you to come in and meet them, maybe play a few songs for them. They want to, you know, believe in you, trust sure. who you are, you know, authenticity, all that.
Right, right. So what is your process, if you're open to sharing it, and if it's not going to be any confidentiality issues, like how do you vet these, look, you know, it's like you got seven guys, you know, you're the high school, the good looking chick in high school, and you got seven guys want to take you to the prom. So how do you decide who to go with? Like, is there do you have certain criteria already?
That's an amazing way to compare it, actually. It's probably more accurate in most ways than not. I think everyone said this in Nashville when it comes to business relationships from the beginning, which is really smart, is you want to find your champion. You want to find someone that is the most excited about what you do, what you're doing, your sound, your image, your goals. You want people to be on board with that. You don't want to sign with someone that's like, okay, yeah, maybe I get it. We'll sign you, but we're going to mold you to be this or that, you know? And
like someone is saying, we'll take a chance on you. You don't want that.
Yeah, and chances are those people aren't a believer exactly in 100% of everything you're doing. They're going to try to mold you to become this other, you know, dare I say, more generic or something that's a little more safe. And with this project, our whole goal was to be different, to be out of the box, to push boundaries, to do things in a different way. And a lot of people, you know, and I think that's part of the reason why we've gotten the attention we have from record labels is because of that. It's uniqueness, and so we're just hoping to maintain that, and we're hoping to find the right relationship with people that want to team up with us, not take over.
So you want a basically a supportive partner, as long as all things being equal, they all have the same, you know, the same stature or the same ability to push you out in the way you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, if the guys that like are the most supportive behind you have been around a week, that, you know, unfortunately, they're probably not going to make the cut.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you definitely need to obviously find major labels, like, you know, but these are all well established, you know, very successful companies that we're talking with right now.
That's awesome. So,
not so worried as much on that front, at least.
That's great, man. I'll be excited to hear the rest of the story here when that comes out.
Thanks, man.
Hey, so just to clarify, you were doing session work in Dallas, and then how did you start getting session calls in Nashville?
Yeah. So in Dallas, I was playing with an artist you mentioned earlier named Chris August. And he always produced and created his own music, which was such an awesome learning experience for me. And I always got to play guitar on it. So I guess through him, you know, I would play on his projects. He would produce some other artists. Randomly, he was producing an EP for this girl, Courtney Tucker, who I am now married to. And that's when I first met her.
Holy, I didn't know that story. Yeah. That's awesome. So, so your wife was a country singer.
Actually, she was doing kind of like pop singer-songwriter kind of music.
That's so funny. I just assume everybody that's like, you know, kind of your age meets online on, you know, whatever the hell, dating service or something like, or on Tinder, you know. Or something. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, 10 years ago, probably. Yeah, 10 years ago, 2007.
That's awesome, man.
He brought me in to play on it. And, you know, she's stunningly beautiful. And I'm like this nervous, kind of nerdy in college, like programming kid, you know. But played guitar on it. We met, you know, we didn't even talk again I didn't even see her again for another, I don't know, 7 years, 6 years, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Or actually, it wasn't that long. It was like 5 years. But it was just funny that
that's how you had her picture up on your wall.
Yeah, right. Of course. But yeah, so anyway, so Chris August was kind of my gateway into that kind of stuff. He did a record with a pretty well-known producer based out of Dallas named Will Hunt. Will had he was in an amazing studio. They had incredible gear. And Will is a very demanding guy in the best way. None of the negative ways of that term, but he just expects excellence.
Sure.
Your parts, your creativity, your delivery, your tuning, which I had learned the lesson the hard way one session. I was like 17 years old and I had some guitars that were just not staying in tune and it was pretty embarrassing on my own front. But working with Will, I just got to see how a real producer works, what he expects. I got to, you know, understand that frame of mind and how to approach songs, how to think outside the box. And working with him taught me a ton. And we had some cool projects with Chris August and some other projects I got to work on with him.
And you were 17 at the time?
Yep, I was 17.
Wow, holy shit, that's amazing. That speaks to your playing, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. It's fun. You know, there's nothing more fun than getting to create music with your friends. Hmm. In my opinion, it's like the best thing in the world. So getting to start to do that for a living was pretty incredible and rewarding.
Okay. So you hooked up with Chris and Will Hunt. How did that get you over to Nashville?
Well, Chris, eventually signed a major label deal in Nashville. And he moved to Nashville and I'm like finishing up my final years of college, trying to trudge my way through this really impossible degree. It's so hard. And, he is going to produce a record in Nashville or, you know, create a record and hires this producer named Ed Cash. Ed's really famous in the Christian music industry. Lots of big names, like a guy named Chris Tomlin. He's worked with a bunch. He's also worked with a bunch of singer-songwriters, Dave Barnes. And anyways, dude's fantastic. He hears one of the projects that I played on with Chris August that Will Hunt did. And Ed really liked it. And he's like, man, I want to use these guys again. There seems to be some kind of magic here with this group of guys. So let's bring them up to Nashville. And let's do a record together. And I'm like, awesome. It's my first time ever going to Nashville and I'm getting to go and work. So we go in and I remember even the first song, you know, he literally hits record, we get sounds, hits record, play the first song down. And at the end, he just kind of turns around in his chair, is grinning. And he's just like, that's pro ball boys right there.
That's
pro
awesome. Ball. You'll remember that the rest of your life.
I will. It's the most encouraging thing. So through that, Ed and I got a great working relationship, and he's brought me up to Nashville to work on a few other projects, and then I also would overdub some guitars for him from my Dallas studio, and I still work with Ed today. We've worked together on stuff for 5-6 years now.
You have to finish the story now about how you met your wife, though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So briefly, Matter, I mean, we probably didn't even really even talk. It wasn't even something on my scope, really.
That's what every guy says. Like, yeah, I didn't really even. I didn't think she looked that good, be honest with you.
If I was even close to being, you know, if I was even close to her level, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. That's how I feel about my wife, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing place to be, my friend. But yeah, we started talking again. Like,
where did you run into her? In Nashville next time?
I had already moved to Nashville, yes, when we started talking again. She was still living in Dallas. And kind of dated on and off for like a year or two, and then finally got back together, realized this was it. This is what I wanted, what she wanted, got engaged. And then, yeah, I got married at the end of 2015.
That's awesome. That's very unusual now, Chris. Nobody gets married anymore.
Yeah.
I know. Have a baby and then break up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think some of that's maybe just a product of my raising. Marriage is like a really, really sacred thing. Mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. I believe it's the hardest thing you'll ever do if you're doing it right. It's not going to be easy.
Totally.
It's a very sacrificial thing. You've got to learn to swallow your pride, be able to give grace. Mm-hmm. And it's also the most rewarding thing and an amazing thing I've ever done. But I think this generation and even past generations maybe don't hold it to the, to the level that I do. And not tooting my own horn or anything. I just think some people don't treat marriage with the respect it needs.
I think that being a little older and seeing some stuff and seeing plenty of people like our age now, like totally either divorced or just like they've been married for X amount of years and they haven't been together for like half of that time. I think, it's the preparation for it is deceiving. Nobody, it's like having kids, to be honest with you. Nobody tells you how much hard work it is to do it right.
Yeah.
And I think people go in there thinking, oh, well, you just get married and then everything's cool. And that's not realistic. That's like thinking, you know, oh, I just start a business and we just make money. It doesn't fucking happen like that. You know, you have to work at it. And like you said, you've got to be very give and take and you have to, it's just tough. You know, I always thought marriage is like a business in the sense that if you stop working it, it stops working. It's real simple.
Yeah.
You know, you stop working your business and the leads don't come in anymore, man. And relationships the same way. So,
yeah.
That's good, man. That's a good story. I didn't know that was a very cool story, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. Yeah.
You're originally from Dallas. It sounds like you had a great childhood.
Yeah. I mean, it was very suburban, you know, middle class Dallas for sure.
Right.
But yeah, man, I had a. I have a twin sister, Victoria, older sister, Brandy. Grew up with hanging out with the neighborhood kids. I was always surrounded by music, as far as like music and computers, actually, as far as I can remember. My dad being like an electrical engineer, he always found a way to merge the two, right? Sure. I kind of grew up with this. He set up this little piano teaching software program. With this keyboard, it was called the Miracle, and it had a bunch of piano lessons and it had a bunch of songs that you would learn. And of course I think I was like 5 or 6, and I would skip most of the lessons and just try to learn the songs based off, like, you can watch them play and it would show you what keys to hit. So I would just try to figure out what keys, and yeah, it's kind of a cheating way, but
it was called the Miracle because if you actually paid attention, it would be a miracle.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. Go ahead.
No, so that's really cool. So your folks set that up for you. But tell me this: what did your grandfather Ed? How did he? It seems like he had a pretty big impact on you from a music standpoint.
Yeah, he did. So
was that your mom's dad or your dad's
yes.
dad? Your mom's dad.
Okay. It was my mom's dad. Neither of my parents were really musical. My dad had a guitar and knew a couple songs, but nothing much. Mm. So my grandfather, as far as I can remember, always made sure my room and game room was filled with instruments. I mean, I had guitars, mandolins, you know, a full drum set. I had like plenty of books to learn all of it. And then he even like was giving me, he gave me like a full PA system. Like I had like a professional mixing console, microphones, cables, speakers. I had like a cassette deck to record stuff. Which was pretty nuts. And it kind of makes me think about like, man, I was like learning to engineer stuff when I was like six. Not good, but
no, trying. It's great. It's, no, but you know what? It's, what I'm thinking is, man, you were this close to becoming like a DJ or a rapper because you were in that age group, right? I mean, it could have gone the other way, Chris. It could have been tragic. So, you know.
But luckily it was the guitar that gripped me early. For sure.
That was awesome.
And drums and some keys, but definitely guitar. But yeah, I probably drove my parents nuts. We'd have the neighborhood kids come over and we'd make our crazy, stupid little songs, blasting through a PA, recording to a tape deck. You know, it's just,
that's
it
great,
was the coolest,
man.
Coolest thing in the world.
That's fantastic.
And I remember regarding my grandfather, I remember one time we're upstairs in this game room and there's like a glass door so you can see outside. And you can look down the staircase. I remember playing this song. I was looking down the staircase, and my grandfather was at the staircase at the bottom looking up, just, you know, beaming with joy.
Yeah.
And it's just cool because, I think he knew that he really helped get the fire started in me with music. And, my mom would always tell me he couldn't be more proud. You know, he was just ecstatic.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, he toured around playing, like, in a little, like, Western swing gospel band.
That's cool.
And, you know, they would play at like churches or like, you know, nursing homes or like, you know, nothing crazy. But it was always fun to go see him play at his little shows. And, you know, I think the biggest imprint he left on me, his musical hero was B.B. King. He just absolutely loved B.B. King. And as a result, loved the Gibson ES-335 hollow body, loved that style guitar and, you know, could never afford one. They weren't wealthy by any means. And, remember one day my dad went to the store in Garland, Texas. It's like a vintage guitar store called Zoo Music. Went there with a friend that knew guitars well and basically picked out a 1969 ES-335 for my grandfather.
Oh, it's, wow.
Yeah, it's walnut. It's beautiful. And one day, maybe 2 years before I was born, he just brought it over to their house on a Sunday afternoon and just gave it to him. Like, hey, check this out. And they said my grandfather was speechless for 3 days. I mean, I have a picture of him holding the guitar with his jaw just on the ground. Like, couldn't believe it. Like, probably one of the coolest things that's ever anyone's ever done for him.
Yeah, that's such a nice thing that your dad did.
Yeah, and that taught me a lot, too, just the awesome gift giving that my dad does. But so seeing that was crazy. Well, a few years before my grandfather passed, he gave me that guitar one day.
Oh,
he's like, hey, I want you to have this. Which that was kind of like a, maybe like a holy shit moment for me. You know, I definitely
passing
had
the torch, man.
Yeah, it was like passing the baton and it was just like, I knew how much that guitar meant to him. That was almost everything for him, you know? So for him to trust me and believe in me, it was just like, that's his stamp of approval on me doing what I'm doing.
That's great, man.
And that guitar is still my prized possession. It's you couldn't ever offer me enough money to sell it. You know, it's maybe only worth a few thousand dollars, but the sentimental value alone is unreal. And the guitar is fantastic. It's the best 335 I've ever played. It sounds unbelievable. The middle pickup position is just like heaven.
That's awesome, man. I'm assuming you don't bring that one on the road with you.
I don't. Every now and then, if it's a short bus run, I'll like throw it in. We call it a junk bunk where we can, you know, I know it'll be safe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if anything ever happened to that thing, I would be heartbroken and I'd hate myself.
Yeah,
so.
I understand that. Wow, what a nice story, man. That's very cool. What set you on the road to country music, like as opposed to something else, or is that just what you listened to in Texas growing up?
You know. When I remember when I was first born into my first years of like remembering, you know, anything, life, my parents definitely loved country music. They loved Garth Brooks. Mm. I actually won them Garth Brooks tickets one time randomly.
Calling the radio station?
Yeah. Kind of. It was like you had to go get in line to buy tickets, and the radio station just picked random people out of the line to get free tickets to.
Oh, cool.
So I got them some. It was at Texas Stadium. You know, pretty. I think they filmed the show. It was like one of his live DVD, you know, or VHSs. But anyways, yeah, my parents loved country music. Restless Heart, Brooks and Dunn. You know, I think they had the vinyls. We'd listen to them, or the CDs when they first came out. But after that, first few years, you know, I started listening mostly to like pop music because my sisters like pop music. And so, you know, I didn't really listen to much country after that. Even when I moved to Nashville, I was still kind of playing pop music or the contemporary Christian music I was touring with at the time. But man, country kind of started taking an interesting turn, I would say, in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. It just started, they started branching out more with some more different styles of instruments that there's not so much a small fence around the production or instrumentation, much to the despair of some people who really, really treasure the classic country sound, which I do too, and I love it. I love old George Jones and stuff. But now that it started changing and I started having some opportunities to play in country music, I was like, man, this probably isn't a bad idea. And financially, it was a great decision. Country artists tend to really, really take care of their people. They're more willing to put their players on salary earlier than maybe some other gigs would. They just really treat people right. So from a business standpoint and a touring standpoint, it's just fantastic. And, man, I love it. I don't know if I'd ever change it. Just the job security, the loyalty. When you go on a tour with 140 people, like it just feels like a family. We were out on tour with Luke Bryan for 2 years in a row, and you knew everyone's name from the, you know, little smallest probably set carpenter to Luke. You know, he'd sit at the dinner table with you and just shoot the shit and just treated you like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just country music for you. It's just for the most part is like that. And it's, I don't know, if you're going to live your life on the road, why do it any other way?
Yeah, that makes sense. And anybody listening, if you're on the edge of the fence about like checking out Dustin, I am not a guy that likes country music. My wife and I, in fact, I'll tell you, God's on a story. The, you know, you had told me you're going to be on, was it Conan?
I believe
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
And so it was like the night or two before the concert. And so I said, I told Ann, I said, hey, let's record this because we're going to this concert. And it was like, I think Friday or Saturday night, maybe. And I said, I want to go see Chris because we spoke on the phone briefly, but I'd never met you and I wanted to see you playing and I wanted to see the band. And we watched it and we're looking at each other and we're like, what a great show. What an entertainer he is, man. And you guys put on a great show, really good music. All night was great, man. You guys put on it. So anybody who's sitting on the edge of the fence thinking, oh, you know, Dustin Lynch, I'm not sure. Just go. It's a great show. If you like country, you love it. If you like rock, you love it. And if you like pop, you love it. It's just a fantastic show. It was really good. Really fantastic, man.
Thanks.
No, man. Thanks, thank you. Craig. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to see it if it wasn't for you. What's your go-to guitar right now?
Oh, man. It's tough.
You had a bunch.
Sorry, go ahead.
I said you had a bunch of nice ones you played on stage.
Oh, thank you. I used to always be a humbucker guy. I always dreamed of the 59 Les Paul, and finally got a Gibson R9 probably about 10 years ago, which is it's an unbelievable guitar. It's amazing.
That's a 59 reissue. Is that a 59 reissue?
Yeah, 59 VOS, 59 reissue, whatever they call it. They changed the names on it. It seems. Amazing guitar. I mean, it's just fantastic. But now maybe it's just because I'm tired of it some or want something different, but I have a Masterbuilt 1962 Telecaster. It's like a red sparkle with like the white binding around it. And it's just everything on that guitar is fantastic. The neck is the best guitar neck I've ever played, probably. Built by John Cruz, who's just unbelievable master builder.
And where is he? The name of the company is Master Built. That's the name of his company.
No. So it's Fender. Fender Custom Shop.
Okay. So that's what I thought. John Cruise is a Fender guy. I thought that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a Fender Custom Shop and then Master Build. They have like seven or eight master builders, I think, whatever they call them. But yeah, it's just, it has the clarity. It just works great for what I do with Dustin right now. And it's my number one go-to in the studio. I know it's going to intonate perfectly. Yeah, it's just a fantastic guitar.
So what's the next two, would you say?
That Les Paul for sure. The R9. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The VOS. That's definitely number two. And then honestly, my 69 335, in walnut, it's unbelievable. I can't bring it on the road with me, you know, cause it was my grandfather's.
Sure.
But, that's definitely probably my prized.
You know what? You are one of the few guys that, like, you play really good guitars, and like, I don't surprise, like a lot of guys will say, well, I bought this. I shouldn't say a lot, but some guys will say, oh, I bought this, this, you know, off brand Tele. It was only $400. And I'm like, man, why?
Yeah. I mean, I would if I could, honestly. And I'm not saying there aren't cheaper guitars that are great. I have some that are fantastic. I have a, it's basically a brand new Fender. It's like a thin line made in Mexico, and it's probably $500 or $600. Mm. But it has a great sound. You know, there's a few things I worked out on the neck, but, you know, you can turn cheaper guitars into great players. Sometimes they're great as they are, but sometimes you just do a little work to them. And they're fantastic. But at the end of the day, the guitar has to be inspiring to me. The guitar has to have a great sound on its own. If I'm up there trying to play, you know, really trying to sell a solo, you know, make it an emotional thing, or, you know, just trying to communicate emotion to the crowd. If I feel like something on the guitar is holding me back, whether it's the action or the frets are rough or the pickups don't sound just right, or my tone's not just right, I can't deliver the performance I want. So more often than not, it's these higher end guitars that really get me there.
Does your Fender Custom, does that have steel frets?
I believe so. I think they're like the 6105 fret wire or something. I'm not sure.
And the Gibson is the same?
You know, I believe so. That's a little more info on those than I'm familiar with. But
I was just curious because I have like a Tom Anderson, right? And
right.
To me, that the steel frets, and I'm not going to say I can't sit here and talk with you and say I play guitar, but I have guitars and I pick them up and play them.
Yeah.
And the steel, I mean, for me as a very amateur player, it just feels so much easier to play. And I was just curious if all the custom guitars have that. It just feels-
I'm almost 99% positive they are all steel.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Wire. Yeah.
Is there any cool or interesting stories behind how you got any of those? Besides the 69, which was a great story.
Yeah, 69 was a great story. The R9, I just saved my butt off for it. I had a connection with a Gibson artist rep at the time, was able to get artist pricing on it, which was still by far way more than I've ever paid for a guitar. Well, at that point it was, at least. But yeah, I mean, it was just my dream guitar. I set my mind on it. I worked like crazy, saved all my session money for like a summer, and got it. And when I did get it, it was, you know, I didn't pick it out. I just had them send me one. I was like, find me one that looks great, sounds great. And they did. And it's, you know, I've played a bunch of other R9s, but I would never trade it. Or I've had friends try to trade me their R9 for mine, and I'll never do it.
Is it like lemon? Lemon burst? What color is it?
I think it's iced tea burst. Okay. I think might have been the proper term at the time. Mm. But yeah, it's definitely kind of that, you know, it's a lot lighter yellowish in the center and kind of goes to an orange almost.
Yeah.
But it's like a perfect flame top. I mean, it's the perfect Les Paul. The neck's fantastic. It's everything I want in a Les Paul.
Now, you're a pretty big guy, so I would imagine it's got a thicker neck.
It does. Yeah. The 59 profile I don't think it's the biggest neck profile they ever had, but it's up there.
Yeah,
the 57 or 58 might be a little bigger, but the way the neck changes from like the lower frets to the upper frets is they just did something right with it. It just fits your hand perfectly, and it positions your hand perfectly for, you know, where you'll be playing up and down the neck. It's just Gibson's got that one figured out.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I'm only 5'9", and I played one of those, and I have average size hands, and it was like I couldn't even get my hands around. I got cramps. It was like not for me.
Yeah.
I need a little slimmer neck. But that's a beautiful guitar, man.
Thank you.
Hey, who are your biggest influences guitar wise?
Oh man, it's funny. I think the first time I really, really wanted to play guitar, I was with my grandfather actually, and we were going to this little diner burger spot and waiting in line for our food, and I remember on the jukebox comes this song that I was like, what is this? That is the coolest sounding song I've heard ever. And it was Layla. It was the original Derek and the Dominoes wow. recording. And I was just like, that is the coolest riff thing I ever heard, and finally figured out who it was. So I remember just trying to learn it. You know, I dove into that song so hard. The original recordings, I had like VHSs. I recorded Eric Clapton off of TV, live performances, trying to learn it. And so yeah, Eric Clapton through the first, you know, several years was definitely it for me. Yeah.
Who else?
I definitely fell in love with U2 at an early age. My sister had a record. She had the Joshua Tree.
Great.
And I remember, of course, you know, I mean, legendary, iconic. But I was young and had no idea who they were. I just thought this stuff sounded really cool. And it sounded like some of the computer music, I guess, I'd been hearing at the time and messing around with. So The Edge, of course, like he is to many guitar players, especially modern guitar players. Huge influence to me. You know, I fell in love with the delay and reverb and all that stuff, probably too much as a young kid. And you can kind of become a crutch at some point. But, that was a huge thing for me. Just sonically and now I'm still in love with, the guys that produced that album, Daniel Lanois.
Yeah.
Who's probably my biggest influence right now as a guitar player, and a producer. He's just, a madman. He's fantastic. He's probably one of the most advanced musicians at communicating emotion that I've ever come across, which is really one of my goals as being a musician, is being able to communicate emotion. I feel like that's what a crowd connects with.
Yeah. You do a good job.
Oh, thank you.
For whatever it's worth, man. Yeah, you did great. You played some awesome solos and it was a lot of fun watching.
Yeah.
What was your first guitar, if you remember?
Yes. I had a terrible no-name hollow body thing that like someone had tried to put a crappy sunburst, like homemade sunburst paint job on. It's still, I think my parents still have it. It's still a piece of junk, but I have no idea. I've tried to figure out what it is. No idea. My older sister, Brandy, one of her best friends' dad had an old Japanese-made Squire sitting underneath his, you know, bed for forever. And it was, like, perfect. And I think my dad bought it for me for, like, $100 or something. And it's actually still an amazing Strat. So it was made in 1985 in Japan, and I believe it was the first year that Squire existed. So it was still being made by the Fender Japan people. And I actually went to see another one of my guitar heroes, a guy named Andy Timmons, who's
amazing. Know that name?
What was it? He toured with a metal band back in the '80s called Danger Danger. And he's played with like Olivia Newton-John, but now he just does his own solo stuff. And he runs the ranks with Satriani and Eric Johnson and all those guys, you know, play shows with them, the G3 shows, that stuff. Anyways, went to one of his shows and he pulls out this black Squire, which is exactly my guitar. And he's like, I know you guys are thinking Squire, but I'm telling you what, this guitar is incredible. Wait till you hear it, plays a song with it. And it's amazing, you know?
Wow.
And that guitar still, if you find them, sells for like $800. They're not cheap necessarily.
I see a lot of people like, and you know, everybody's an expert online, so I don't believe anyone. you know, they're saying Japanese guitars are great, but I think I wouldn't just go. I've seen some really nice ones to sell on eBay, but you just don't know what you're getting and who's,
right?
You know, it's a you don't know where it's selling. I mean, they're beautiful guitars. They have some really cool colors that Fender doesn't make anymore, like Fiesta Red and, you know, like Eggshell Blue. And I'm like, wow, they look cool, but, you know, and I hear they're good, but yeah, I've learned from experience not to buy a guitar online unless, you know, unless it's a couple of an inexpensive guitar and, you know, you don't care about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I've heard the same thing. I have a lot of friends that swear by the Japanese Fenders and they say the Japanese, I guess, just, they take everything very, very seriously. They expect perfection in the instruments they make. And I know this, I think, is it Duesenberg that's also made in Japan, or maybe I'm thinking of another company, but another company over there, they're just like, every guitar plays like a BMW or Mercedes, everything's perfect. But yeah, I haven't had much personal experience, to be honest.
Yeah. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing, the computer science thing as a backup? You'd be coding away?
I mean, it's hard to say I would be. If I had to, out of necessity, especially now that I have a family, that would probably be my best financial choice. Yeah. But, man, it's just not – I just don't know if it was ever for me. The only reason really why I chased that
– I was curious about that.
Yeah, my dad in the best way – so my dad had a master's in electrical engineering, and that's all he did his entire life, worked for a big defense contractor. And I was always raised, even loving music at a young age, he was always like, you can do whatever you want, but just get a degree and, you know, something you can fall back on, which I'll never regret. I'm so proud that I did that. I learned a lot about myself. It was one of the hardest things I ever did, and I still managed to graduate with a 3.0 somehow.
Awesome.
But it was not what I wanted to do, and I was having to turn down touring opportunities my final few years of college. But yeah, I got that degree and literally moved to Nashville a week later and never looked back.
Yeah, and you can't say it was wrong, because look at, you know, everything is a part of your journey, you know. You never, I mean, look where you're at now, you're in a really nice place, so it was obviously the right thing to do. Has having your daughter changed anything about your life? And if so, how?
Oh, man, I was just telling someone the other day. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say, but it literally changes your perspective on everything. It changes the way you look at how you spend free time. It changes the way you treat your finances. It really puts a fire under your ass. I mean, to get your life together if you haven't, because you have not just a wife now, but a child that is fully relying on you for everything, not to mention like a good future and like a steady foundation for the rest of her life. So yeah, I take everything a little more seriously now, with health, with how hard I work, with, you know, job opportunities and stuff like that. I mean, it's awesome, but it does make you grow up whether you like it or not.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Chris, so far, what's your biggest business or personal win so far?
You know, I had a lot of people tell me not to move to Nashville, to not do that thing. And, I've seen Nashville chew up and spit out a lot of people, not because it's necessarily a hard town or a mean town. It's actually a pretty great town, but, there is a lot, there are a lot of amazing players here. I mean, there's so many fantastic players that are waiting tables. So to be able to come here and kind of just have a successful touring gig and have some studio work going and some production and songwriter work going as well, it's just been, I don't know, it's just rewarding and encouraging and almost to show the naysayers like, hey, you said I shouldn't or can't do this, and I did, and I'm doing it. So
yeah, you know, righteous indignation has taken me very far at times, so I feel exactly what you're saying, man. I feel that one. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music, Chris?
Man, I don't have much time for much out of music.
Right.
We're on the road a ton. I enjoy cooking.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So when I'm home, I cook most of our meals more just because I enjoy doing it. And there's something healing or just rewarding from, you know, when you're on the road, you have to eat whatever someone provides for you at the time they tell you to eat, which I'm not complaining. It's just to be able to come home and buy your own ingredients, make what you want to make and enjoy the process. I love doing that.
Well, I think I apologize.
No.
I think it goes back to being appreciative of those little things, you know, that you know other people take for granted. You know, and here on the road, you're like, man, I'd love to just have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm sure you're not making that, but whatever, you know, it is
right.
Like.
And it's funny how music and cooking, I know it sounds crazy in a stretch, but how they kind of relate and how they taught me stuff. Like when it comes to production, it's all about balance and having parts that work together. And I feel visualizing it with cooking too, it's the same way. You have to have this blend of all these different ingredients that kind of have all these different flavors that maybe are awful on their own, but work well together. It's kind of a cool parallel there.
No, I could totally see that, man. That makes total sense. It's funny. I asked somebody that question the other day. I said, do you have any hobbies outside of music? They go, guitar. Cause they're like, I got no time, man. You know, the same kind of thing. What's your favorite and least favorite parts of your job?
Oh man. Definitely the best things of the job is getting to see the country and the world. We have some cool international stuff coming up. We're going to Australia.
Wow. With Dustin? Really,
yeah, with Dustin. Awesome. Yeah, we'll be there in March, I believe, next year. I think that's announced. Hopefully, yeah, that's announced. Okay, we're good.
I could edit it out if it's not.
Oh, no, we're good. We're good. But honestly, man, the hour or hour and a half you're on stage in front of a crowd that is there to see you, and they know all the words to every song, and they've been looking forward to that show, and they're just they're just having the best time of their life. And it's like this two-way communication that goes with, you know, between the crowd and the band. Because the more excited and elevated and loud they are, it feeds back to us. It's like this big feedback loop. And that's really the most rewarding, incredible feeling. It's just fun. There's no other way to get around it. It's just the most rewarding, fun thing.
That's very nice, man.
Now the hard part, the worst part about what I do for a living, which is, you know, I always say it's like the most first of first world problems, but, it's just being away from home. Mm-hmm. It's traveling. It's being away from my wife. It's right now seeing my 2-month-old change like crazy.
Sure.
And not being able to see her every day and, you know, having to close that front door and leave when she's just staring at me and smiling. And it gets hard. And along with that, you're in a tour bus, which is amazing. It's the best way to travel, but you're surrounded by a bunch of other guys. And I'm a bit of introvert in some ways. And so not having alone time or quiet time or really even private space at all does take a little bit of a mental toll on you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In general, it's all amazing. But I always tell people it does cost something.
Yeah, there's no free lunch. That's we've had some conversations. You have such a mature attitude about things in general. I think a good level of awareness about stuff, which is probably beyond your years, which I think is really cool. I'm surprised to hear you're an introvert.
Well, yeah, I mean, I grew up, you know, yeah, playing music, but I was super, I mean, for lack of better terms, nerdy. Like I played tons of computer games and like, you know, while I was messing with recording stuff and music stuff on the computer, I was playing games and I was just, you know, I wasn't definitely not the popular kid in school. Once I joined, I think you mentioned earlier, I was in drumline in high school, which kind of, you know, we were super revered in our high school. Everybody loved us. So that maybe helped me come out of my shell a little bit. But, yeah, I was kind of always just like the chunky, not cool kid. that like interesting. Music.
Because I mean, you've been so like, man, talking to you is a breeze. You've been, I mean, even not forget about this interview, just in general, you've been so like open, easygoing. Yeah, you've been super easy. I'm that was just surprising to hear that.
Well, and like it or not, living on the road will force you to become that a little more.
Yeah.
Which it definitely has done for me, and I'm thankful it has. But yeah, still at heart, I still need my recharge time comes when I'm, you know, sipping some good whiskey or a cup of coffee on my patio at home.
Yeah, I hear
just kind of contemplating everything in life and where I'm at in life, and you know, that's when my most mental progress, I would say, happens.
What kind of whiskey do you like? Because I don't drink a lot, but when I do, I like whiskey.
Oh man, so that's probably my other hobby is coffee and probably really alcohol of any sort. I know that sounds awful, but I'm almost a connoisseur of wines. I love wines, and I love whiskeys and tequilas. So whiskey, gosh, there's so many good ones. I really like, there's this brand called Weller that's actually pretty cheap, but it's fantastic. And then I really like Colonel Taylor.
Never heard. Oh, so okay. So you're drinking whiskey as opposed to like, talking about American whiskey, more like bourbons.
Right. Okay, yes. Okay. But I do love them all. I love scotch. We actually have a really nice bottle of scotch on our bus right now. That I definitely like to light up a cigar.
Dude, I didn't know that. I would have bought a cigar with me when we hung out. That's my thing, man. Coffee and cigar. Yeah, I swear, coffee and cigars.
Oh, man.
If I'd have known that, we would have hung out. We would have been smoking a cigar right out there sitting on that bench, man. I would have loved to do that. That's so
well, man. I wish I knew. I have a little travel humidor case I bring with me, and I actually have a couple of Cubans I got in Canada with me right now.
That's cool, man. Yeah, next time I see you, we'll hang out and have a cigar, because I love sitting there having a coffee and a cigar. That's like downtime for me, man. And I don't get to chill very often, you know, so with a cigar. So I wind up like smoking a cigar and I walk the dog, or, you know, a little piece of it, and it, you know, lasts me 4 or 5 dog walks or whatever. But
right.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Coffee, cigars, and whiskey is my thing. What's that?
What do you like to smoke? Sorry, what do you like to smoke?
I usually smoke full-bodied cigars. There's actually a company out of a boutique. They started about 5-6 years ago now. They were a boutique company when they started, out of Texas, called RomaCraft.
Okay.
And they make – I probably smoke – the owner of the company is called Skip – I forgot his last name, but it's RomaCraft, RomaCraft. And, man – I have probably smoked 10 boxes of their cigars. I've never had this is over, you know, 6 or 7 years. I've never had a bad one in there. Construction is perfect. I mean, if you like full-bodied cigars.
I do.
Yeah, I would look at RomaCraft. The Cro-Magnon line is really good. Man, I like the Padrones, but they're so freaking expensive. They're nuts. $30 a cigar. And you know what? I hate this. You know, there comes a certain point once you – that cigar happens to be worth it, but most of them that are like over $10-$12, they're really not, in my opinion, you know?
Is it like a 1926 or the 45 anniversary?
Yeah, the 1924 is the one. That's my favorite.
Okay,
God, those are great. And I like what else am I smoking? There's a couple of – see, in Tampa's kind of a cigar town, so I have found a couple of independent guys here that have their own brand that are actually pretty good cigars, and they're like, you know, $3 to $5, and you get a really good stick. So like when I'm downtown or whatever, I always grab a box of those, you know, if I'm in need. But another one I like is – again, they're pricey. I only buy them once in a blue moon. What's the guy's name? Drew Estate. He makes – man, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but what do you like?
I definitely like the darker cigars too, which is funny to me. I don't like cigars when they get like really, really spicy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a brand called My Father.
Oh, yeah. I know that. I know them. I've smoked those.
And I think they might have won a Cigar of the Year with one of their sticks a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like the Le Bijou 1922 or something. They have a Torpedo, and it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite cigars right now.
That's what I usually smoke, Torpedoes. I like the shape for some reason.
Yeah, and you can cut them at a 45-degree angle. Do you ever do that?
No, I usually just snip the back off. I've never tried that, but I will try the next one I light up. I'll cut it at a 45-degree angle.
Yeah, it's an old trick someone taught me, but you get all that extra surface area, I guess, on your tongue. I don't know. It's a different experience.
Well, yeah, it's right. It is extra surface. I will try that next time. This weekend, I'll try one. Man, I wish I would have known that. Next time we hook up, we'll definitely at least have cigars, and like coffee or whiskey is fine with me too, man. I'm good with that.
That's all so about cool. It.
Actually, there's a pretty good coffee in Nashville. We went with their Bongo coffee.
Yeah, Bongo Java. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. We enjoyed that. I'm kind of a coffee snob, but I'm not snob. Pizza, coffee, it's about the only thing, you know, poor man's things to be snob.
Well, coffee can get expensive, unfortunately. I'm pretty nerdy about coffee too. So
what do you like to drink?
Oh man, I like anything that's really light roast.
Okay.
You know, so you kind of just get a lot more different flavors than if you just kind of turn roast coffee so much it turns into charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
Which some people love.
No, but like Starbucks, I can't but yeah, stand I get, that coffee.
Yeah. I call it Charbucks.
It's good. You ever have Stumptown?
Yeah, Stumptown's great.
Yeah, I love Hollow Mountain brand. That's awesome.
Yeah, that level of coffee, they call it, I guess, craft coffee or specialty coffee.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have like a whole little coffee brewing rig where I do it. I do everything by hand, grind the beans and brew it all by hand for one cup when I'm on the road.
Dude, I smell it's kind of. I smell spin-off podcasts for the two of us.
I love it, man.
Hey, I got to ask you this. What's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you on stage?
Well, it would definitely be falling off stage. So I'm playing, it's probably 2012. We're at the basketball arena at Penn State University, sold out, 15,000 people, and playing kind of this Christian music festival event deal. And I'm on this little B stage at the back of the room, kind of behind the front house console. And they're doing kind of like a giving offering kind of thing. And I was wearing glasses for the first time. I usually wear contacts, but my eyes were bothering me. Wearing glasses, and they kind of throw off your depth perception until you get used to it. Well, walk up on this little B stage, kind of lose my balance, and end up putting one foot down on like this case that's next to the stage, and it rolls away. And this is during literally during a prayer. So the whole room is completely silent, and this case hits the ground, and I hit the ground shortly after it. Oh. It is the loudest sound, and you just hear everyone gasp like crazy.
Did you get hurt?
And, well, I didn't think so at the time. I cut my thumb. My thumb was bleeding a little bit. My jeans ripped from behind my knee all the way up to my crotch.
Oh, man.
And the worst part is I still had to get back up on stage and play the song because I was about to play a song.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, I was holding my brand new Collings Dreadnought Acoustic, which, well, unluckily, it's a I think it was like a $4,500 acoustic. I somehow managed to land on my back holding it up in the air, and one of the techs had grabbed it, because if that thing broke, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah, you would have been very sad.
So I got back on stage, played the song, my legs crossed because my pants are ripped wide open. There's blood dripping down the guitar from my thumb. And yeah, that was probably the most embarrassing. Paramedics checked me out after to see if I had like a concussion, because I hit my head pretty hard. Didn't think so at the time, but I started throwing up later that night, so I'm pretty sure I did.
Oh, yeah, that's a concussion for sure, man.
Yeah, probably should have went and got medical attention, and I didn't. But all that said, yeah, falling off stage in front of 15,000 people is definitely – that's definitely tops the list.
Yeah, I would say you win on that one. two more questions, Chris. What is the most important lesson your business has taught you?
Oh man. Shoot, there's so many. I think it's just that nothing comes easy, nothing worthwhile happens overnight. Even when you think you've made really good progress, you don't stop and rest. Like you gotta keep going. You know, I think it can be real easy to set little milestones and kind of stop and celebrate sometimes, but it's like, no, it's the minute you rest is the minute your competitor steps in. I think that's a huge one. And I think people really underplay, relationships. A lot of people, if they do try to play the relationship game, they often come off as fake or it's be like, hey, let's hang out, let's do this, but then they never really act on it. I think being genuine and having genuine relationships should be a goal anyways, but the benefit from that as well is, you know, you kind of build a team of guys that are, they're your little tribe. You recommend each other, you work together. You're not so much on your own. You have friends around you. Everyone's lifting each other up and helping each other out through this crazy music industry. I think having allies on your side is extremely important.
I think those are really good. I think that's a lot of wisdom there in the relationship thing, especially. Actually, I'm going to ask you two more questions. Sorry. Person who's had biggest influence on your life.
Oh, man. I would definitely say my grandfather. If it wasn't for him, I don't see how I would have ended up doing any kind of music stuff. Much to my parents' demise in a very, very loud house. I can't even imagine. I'm so thankful.
You sound like you're pretty good parents, man, that they were real supportive of you.
Oh, they absolutely were. And my parents still love to come to every show they possibly can. That's relatively close to Dallas. And they're all, you know, every time we get to play the Grand Ole Opry with Dustin a bunch, and my mom's always tuning in, and, you know, they're always watching us when we're on TV. It's awesome to have supportive parents.
That's nice, man. I'm happy for you. Last question, Chris, is what's your definition of happiness?
Oh, man. If only it could be dumbed down. I think that's something that changes. That happiness has changed for me with each stage of life. I don't know if I can define what it is, because I think it's different for everyone. And I know you're asking my opinion. I'll tell you for sure what it isn't. Happiness is not necessarily success, and success is not necessarily happiness. I know growing up as a player, I was always like, oh, if only I get that gig. And then if only I'm, you know, playing in clubs, and then I would get there and then be like, oh, well, if only I'm touring around, if only I moved to Nashville, if only I get a tour bus gig, if only we're playing sold out NFL stadiums, which we've got to do these last few years. You can always dream of something bigger and better. So I think the endless chasing of success won't alone bring happiness, but happiness it's a choice, if you ask me. It's choosing to be thankful for where you're at. It's choosing to be satisfied with life and what's in front of you. And that's not saying that you don't strive for better for yourself and your family, but you have to choose to be happy. You have to choose to be thankful for where you're at in your surroundings. I think it's a daily choice.
And I think that was well spoken, and I agree with you. I think that is for me, it's always changed. That's not a static answer. It's a moving target all the time. And it can change day to day sometimes, or, you know, period of your life to period of your life, I think is the best way to say it. Hey, man, you're an awesome guy. I really mean that. And I think, you know, I mean that, but is there anything you'd like to promote, or, you know, anything we could turn people on to right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it earlier. Just go check out Cash Campbell. He's got a couple videos on YouTube. We got some songs on Spotify and Apple Music. You should be able to check it out for free either way. Give it a listen. It's not necessarily what some would call guitar music, although there is a lot of guitar on it. Although I'm usually striving to transform the sound of the guitar to sound a little more like a keyboard or a synth in some of this. It's very pop forward music, but check it out and maybe drop me a line on social media. If you like it, I would love to hear some feedback.
That's awesome. But don't spin it. Just go buy it. Just, you know, send them some money. You know, I mean, yeah, if you like it, buy it, man. It's real simple.
However you consume music. Yeah.
Support the working musicians of America. Hey, man, it's a pleasure talking to you. You're an awesome guy. I'm looking forward to next time we can hang out. And anytime you want to come back on here when your album comes out with Cash, man, I'd love to have you back. And more so over the next couple of years, I want to get you back because I know your career is going to explode, and that'll be exciting to see that.
Oh, Craig, I appreciate that. I'll drop you a line when I start our new podcast, Cigars and Scotch, tomorrow.
There you go. There you go, man. Just don't make me have to go through a manager to get to you. That would be so, like, I couldn't. I'm such a, like, non, like, rule follower. That would just, like, I don't know. I'd rather someone tell me, look, fuck off, I don't have time for you, than make me go to a manager and have a manager say the same thing without saying the same thing.
Yeah, I get it.
You know,
I get
it's just it. Like so much it's just, I don't have the time to waste, please. You know, don't piss on my back and tell me it's raining outside. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of. Yep. But anyway, man, thank you for everything, Chris. You're awesome. And congratulations on the single with Cash. Congratulations on your little daughter and with you and your wife. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. I certainly did. Thanks again to Chris LaCourte. He's an awesome guy. Go out and see him on tour. He's with Dustin Lynch. He's an amazing player, and it's a fantastic show. Go to iTunes and check out his single with Cash Campbell. Buy it, consume it, and tell all your friends. And thank you for listening. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes. And that's it, man. We'll see you on the next episode. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, I'm out, everybody. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.